Tonight on Old Time Radio Drama, Hopalong Cassidy from 1950, The Great Gildersleeve from 1942, CBS Radio Workshop takes you to the Battle of Gettysburg. Mr. District Attorney has the case of the unknown source from 1948. Bogart and Bacall will take you to Smoldering Tropical Adventure in a broadcast from 1952 of Bold Venture. And Dark Fantasy from 1942 has a strange and twisted tale called I Am Your Brother. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we'll start by saddling up with Hopalong Cassidy and California Carlson, William Boyd and Andy Clyde, in an outing called Dead Man's Hand from January 1st, 1950.
It's Hopalong Cassidy. With action and suspense, out of the Old West comes the most famous hero of them all, Hopalong Cassidy, starring William Boyd. The jingle of the silver spurs heralds that fabulous figure of the early West, Hopalong Cassidy. The same hoppy you cheer in motion pictures, with the same California you've laughed at 100 times in your local theater. These famous partners come riding into radio just as you've asked for them. William Boyd as Hopalong Cassidy and Andy Clyde as California. Our story tonight, Dead Man's Hand. With winter coming on and the snow beginning to crawl down the distant mountains, there are 100 things to be done around the Bar 20 Ranch. But Hopalong Cassidy knows that some of those things will have to wait, for he and California are going to have another job to do. Oh, it might be an easy job, like just giving a friend a helping hand. Then again, it might mean tangling with a treacherous gang who put gold nuggets above human life.
Hoppy, how in tarnation am I going to get my work done with you snaking me in off in the range like a lamed-up dog?
No, I wouldn't have sent that rider out after you without a pretty good reason, California.
Well, my ears are up. Let's have her.
You remember Kit Kirby?
Do I remember Kit? Why, he was one of the best hands we ever had.
He's in trouble. Listen to this letter I got this morning. Dear Hoppy, I'm writing you because I think you're the only friend I got left. Gold is where you find it, they say. And my partner Joe and I found it after 3 years in these godforsaken mountains. Our first samples assayed $500 to the ton.
Gee, Willikins, that's a rich strike.
Sure is. We thought we were lucky until the day Joe left with the second batch of samples, and I found him 10 hours later in Whitewater Pass with a bullet in his back. So I'm alone now. But that's not why I'm writing you. My wife Sally is alone, too, in Indian Springs. And she needs help, Hoppy. Your kind of help. That's all I can say now. Wish me luck, pal. Kit Kirby.
Sounds like the boy has got himself in trouble.
Yeah, I believe Kit's in real trouble. More than this letter tells. Because, you see, I know Kit's handwriting. And this letter is a bad imitation.
You mean it ain't?
Someone wants us to come to Indian Spring, California. And they want it badly enough to forge this letter.
Now a word from your announcer. Hopalong Cassidy. There was a 4-day ride behind them when Hoppy and California pulled into the rough, dirty little town of Indian Springs. And as they walked into the town's rickety hotel, past a poker game to the bar, Hoppy knew that only gold would bring Kit Kirby to a place like this.
Jack's the better to open.
Away you, Ed.
I'm good for the limit.
How many?
How many what?
Well, all we got's whiskey, so I don't ask what do you want. I ask how many.
And suppose a fellow wants a room for the night.
How long are you staying?
Does that make any difference?
Well, not to me, but might to you. If I was you, I'd ride on to Sahara in the morning.
You know, mister, offhand, I'd say you were scared of something.
Well, it ain't only me. It's everybody around here. Look, if you're smart, you'll get right back on that horse of yours.
Jerry!
Yeah, Luke?
You're around here to tend boil, ain't you, Jerry?
Sure,
Well, quit your shooting off your mouth and set up them that drink.
Yeah.
You hear?
Right away, Luke.
Jerry the jackrabbit. Look at him jump. Talking. All the time talking.
Any objections?
Yeah. Talking can get a man into a heap of trouble, pal. Remember that on your way out of town tomorrow.
Okay, boys, this is the money hand. I want to be in at the start. Give me five big ones, huh?
Gosh, Hoppy, I wouldn't turn my back in a hitching post in this town.
Look at that poker game. $20 limit.
Solid feel plumb naked here without a six-gun on his hip.
Shh. Here comes Jerry.
Look, mister, this town's no place for a cowpoke on the loose. Now, take my advice. Ride on to Saguaro. Trail's plain and you'll have a moon.
Why Saguaro?
They've got the law in Saguaro. Government marshal.
You mean there's no law around here?
Well, I don't know. Nobody's seen the sheriff since day before yesterday. Now, that Luke Berry over there, he's a killer. Got the whole town buffaloed. Oh, there's gonna be trouble. I can smell it.
Maybe I don't smell as sharp as you, Jerry.
You dirty skunk, double check me, will you? I'll show you.
Get down!
Take it easy.
You sure got Luke. That was fast going, Doc.
You saw him pull a gun on me. It was self-defense. I had to shoot.
Well, sure, Doc.
Well, I'm still a doctor, and it's my duty to see what I can do for him. Help me get him over to my office.
You can come up from behind the bar now, Jerry.
Luke? What was it? Was it Luke? Why, nobody ever pulled a gun on Luke before.
Well, I better get him over to my office fast. I'm afraid it's too late, but I'll do what I can.
I'm sure awful concerned about a fellow he just shot.
Who is that, Jerry?
Oh, it's Doc Sheldon. He's got a shingle hanging out right across the street.
Come on, California. Let's take a look.
Look for what, Hoppy? Ain't we already seen enough?
This is a funny one.
Why are you looking at them cards?
Well, this is the dead man's hand, California, and I find it very interesting. This Luke fella, sitting here, wasn't he?
That's right.
And the fella who shot him was here?
What do you say? We just forget the cards.
Wait a minute, California. Luke said something about the other fella double-decking him. Pulled his gun first, that right?
Well, sounded like that. I was under a table by that time.
Take a look at the cards. Luke's got a full house here. The other man held a pair of tens. Now, why should that guy with a winning hand pull a gun first?
Well, maybe he was drunk.
Oh, not that drunk.
What's on your mind?
Oh, just something to think about, that's all. Fix us up at the room, will you? My name's, McKinney. This is California Jones. Looks like we'll be here in Indian Springs for quite a while.
Well, it's your funeral.
Maybe.
Don't you think...
And, Jerry, could you tell us where Kit Kirby's wife lives? I'd kind of like to ride out and see her tonight.
I'm so glad to see you, Mr. Cassidy.
Our kid is very close to me, Mrs. Kirby.
Oh, we do need help. We're afraid. The whole town's afraid. I've wished 1,000 times Kit hadn't found that gold.
You think that has something to do with it?
It has everything to do with it. The night Joe brought in the first sample, someone broke into the assay office and stole the reports. That's how news of the strike got out. Joe went to Sheriff Underwood, but I guess someone else got there first.
How's that?
Well, the sheriff seemed afraid to do anything. Then Mr. Sykes at Wells Fargo called a protest meeting. He was attacked on the street the next night. Left town after he got a note threatening his family.
Well, didn't anyone do anything about it?
The editor of the weekly paper tried to. He wrote up the story together with what he knew about the gold strike, but the paper never came out.
Well, why not?
His office burned to the ground last week, presses and all.
That bartender fella knew what he was talking about.
When was Kit's partner shot on the trail?
Just before the fire. That's when I knew it was more than I could handle, Mr. Cassidy. Sheriff Underwood promised me he'd do something, but...
Yeah, but he left town in a hurry, too. You got any idea who's behind this, Mrs. Kirby?
Well, I thought it was Luke Barry until this afternoon.
You heard about the shooting?
Yes. I want to give you something, Mr. Cassidy. It'll tell you how to get to the mine after the trail leaves Whitewater Pass. I just drew it from memory. No one knows how to get there, you see. There's a maze of mountains and canyons beyond the pass.
Kit's up there now, huh?
He hasn't come out for a month. I haven't even seen him in that long.
Well, now, isn't it surprising that I got a letter from him dated less than 3 weeks ago?
I guess
thought maybe he'd sent it out by you. But you say you hadn't seen him. You know, Mrs. Kirby, it's awfully hard to help when you just know half the story.
All right. I'll tell you. I did write that letter. But it was only because Kit needs help so desperately. And even if he could get a letter to you, you know how proud he is. He'd never ask anyone for help.
I know. He's got more spirit than Topper.
That say no art, because Topper's a mighty fine bit of horse flesh.
It was wrong of me to sign Kit's name to that letter, I know. But you do understand why I did it.
Yes, I do, Mrs. Kirby. But just don't make a practice of it. Somebody else might not understand. Now about Kit. He's afraid he might get the same reception as his partner if he starts down the trail. So he's just sitting tight, huh?
Yes, but he has to come out, Mr. Cassidy. It's snowing up there already, and he's almost out of supplies.
What about the gold?
Well, that's up there, too. Over $40,000 worth of it. And it's got to come out sometime through Indian Spring, Wells Fargo.
Tell me, is there anyone in town you know you can trust?
Just Doc Sheldon. He's one of Kit's best friends. Oh, I see him coming up the walk now.
Mr. Kirby, we'll be in the next room. Don't tell him we're here.
But he's...
Please.
Oh, all right.
Come on, California.
Right behind you.
Hello, Doc.
Sally. You heard about Luke Barry?
I heard he was shot. Is he...
Died in my office an hour ago. He drew a gun on me first. Clear-cut case of self-defense. Half a dozen witnesses. I thought you'd want to know, Sally. Luke told me everything.
What do you mean, Doc?
He was back of the whole thing. That business at the assay office. The fire. All of it. Sally, honey, I think we're out of the woods now. The reign of terror is over.
I'm not so sure.
You still think Luke was working for someone else?
Oh, I don't know, Doc. It's been such a nightmare, I can't think anymore.
You've got to think, Sally. About Chip. He's got to get out of the mountains before the snow bottles him up.
Any news on the sheriff?
Haven't heard. I think he's gone to Saguaro for the marshal. Take a look out the window there.
What?
That sky. Snow could hit those mountains again tonight. It doesn't make sense, Sally. We've got to go up there and get Kit out.
I told you I arranged for the sheriff, Doc.
I tell you, this secret of business is only hurting Kit. Winter doesn't wait for anyone.
All right, Doc. If the sheriff isn't back by tomorrow morning, I'll take you up.
That's better, Sally. Now you're being sensible. I'll be here tomorrow morning at sunup.
Yes, Doc, I'll be ready.
Good night, Sally.
Good night.
You say you can trust him?
Oh, I think so.
I hope so.
You mean I shouldn't have promised to guide him up there?
No, that's what's all right. But stall him as long as you can tomorrow morning. Come on, California.
Where are we going, Hoppy?
Best place I know at the moment. To bed. California, wake up. California.
No, thank you, ma'am. No more meatballs. I get all roast turkey I can eat.
Always thinking of food. California.
Hoppy. What time is it? Why?
Get your britches on.
It's dark. Why?
Get your britches on. I got an idea.
Great time to get ideas, Hoppy. Run me ragged all day, ducking lead in the barroom. Then ain't got the decency.
Hurry up.
Can't find my boots, Sam. Maybe my eyes are still closed.
Never mind the boots, just the britches. You ready?
Yeah, but...
Come on.
What's got into you? What time in the morning is it anyway?
It's 4:00. Now be very quiet and follow me. Right down the stairway into the bar room.
What is this?
I want to try a little experiment.
I give up. I'm going to get me a nice, quiet job in a chuck wagon somewhere. Getting up at 4 a.m. to do spermage. When a man works as hard as I do, Hoppy, he needs his 40 winch.
Here we are. This is the table.
What table?
Well, the boys were playing poker this afternoon. Now, you sit there. That's it. And I'll sit here facing you with the bar at my back. Now, you're Luke Baring. You're holding the high hand. But for some reason or other, you tell me I'm double-decking and drawing me. Wait a minute.
Oh, I'm a long-suffering critter. Why, I... Go ahead. Go on, Huffy. I'm Luke Baring.
You shoot once and miss. Then we trade shots. You miss again. I don't. Then I fire two more and it's over.
Now we can go back to bed?
I don't get it, California. You missed me twice. What happened to your bullet? Look, not a mark on the bar. If you shot high, you'd have busted that mirror behind it into a million pieces.
Wait a minute, Hoppy. You mean them shots were, Hoppy, where'd you launch it?
Under the table. Come on down and help me look.
Oh, what you looking for?
Well, let's see now.
If it weren't so mighty dark, I'd help you find it. But that is if I knew what it was, of course.
Ah, here we are. I thought Doc Sheldon was pretty hasty packing Luke Baring off to his office.
What you got?
There was no killing here this afternoon. That was a put-up jump to make Santa Cruz think Luke is dead.
Before we continue with the exciting story, Dead Man's Hand, here is a word from your announcer. Hopalong Cassidy. Hoppy and California have been in a lot of strange places at some very odd hours. At the moment, they are under a poker table in the Indian Spring Barroom. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and they are just sitting and thinking, trying to make sense out of the discovery that the shooting of Luke Baring was staged, and undoubtedly for Sally Kirby's benefit.
This piece of wadding is what I found under the table, California. A piece of wadding from a blank cartridge.
Blank cartridges? What do you know about that, Hoppy? Doc Sheldon knew Mrs. Kirby would take him up to the mine if she thought Luke was out of the way. Shh, quiet. It's the dead man on Doc.
Yeah, Luke Baring is just about as dead as I thought.
Just like a charm. You better saddle up now. Right over that bluff over Whitewater Pass.
Be a long way.
We can't afford to be spotted. What we plan, still murder, you know. Best protection you got is staying dead.
Yeah, gonna hate to miss my funeral in the morning. Now, what are the plans? What about Kirby?
We ought to hit the pass on the way down about 3 p.m. Mrs. Kirby will be first. Then Kirby. Remember that. Number 2 is Kirby. I'll bring up the rear after the fact news. You won't be able to tell who's who at that distance. So draw your bead on number 2. And don't miss.
I didn't miss before, did I?
He talked after you left him. I didn't like that.
Dad, don't worry. Kirby won't talk.
And remember, I got to get out of this clean. Everything depends on that when the boss files for Kirby's claim.
I'll see you in 6 weeks in Santa Fe.
All right. And remember, I want you on your way to Whitewater Pass before sunup. Understand?
Suppose you leave that to me.
them dirty double-crossing skunks. Let's grab them, Hoppy.
Not so fast, California.
But, Hoppy, they'll get Kirby as he comes down that trail.
Well, if we grab these two right now, the boss they mentioned in Santa Fe will send somebody else after Kit. The only way to settle this right is to find out who's behind it all. So we'll just have to play along.
Well, let's check in my instincts. But, doggone, Hoppy, you always seem to know best. It gets downright monotonous.
You trying to flatter me? Come on. It's almost daybreak, and we got to hurry up and spruce up a bit.
Huh?
Well, don't folks always dress up to go to a funeral?
Funeral? Hoppy, you mean...
Yes, sir. Luke Berry's last rite. I have a hunch we're going to find it mighty interesting.
And being there's no preacher in Indian Spring, I just thought that I'd get up and take charge here. Now, as you know, we're sending Luke Berry to his reward.
Yeah, that's right.
And at a time like this, we're supposed to say something nice about the deceased. Now, being the deceased is Luke Berry, that regulation puts me at a whopping handicap.
Hoppy, Winternation.
Take it easy. I'll tell you when.
Anyone present got anything nice to say about Luke? Well, that being the case, sermon's over. Let him down easy, boys.
Just a minute.
Well, what's the matter, mister?
Let's not be too hasty putting old Luke away. I'm one of his best friends, and I'd like to see the body.
I'm sorry, mister. She's nailed down to stay.
Rip her up. I want to see him.
You get back down.
You heard what I said. Take the lid off of that coffin.
Well, you'll get tough with me, will you?
And it isn't customary for the parson to pull a gun on the chief mourner. California.
Yeah?
Take the lid off.
Right, Hoppy. Put it off easy. One of the boards just cracked. Hey, listen, stop it, will you?
I'd shut up if I were you.
Oh, here she comes. There.
Who's in it?
I don't know. Never seen him. Good Lord. Why, it's Sheriff Underwood.
Oh, my goodness.
Just a minute, folks. Just a minute. I know I'm a stranger to all of you, but I'd like to say something.
Well, speak up, mister. Yeah, what do you got to offer there?
Since I rode into this town yesterday, I've seen nothing but fear. All of you are shaking in your boots. Now, you're only as strong as you want to be. If you want to lie down and keep taking it, there's plenty of rats who will keep walking on you. It's up to you. How much longer are you going to take it?
Well, what have you got to offer?
Okay, mister, we're listening.
All right, you got a jail in town. I saw it. Put the parson here inside it, and I'll have another one for you by nightfall. Come on, California, we got a job to do and do fast.
Hoppy, if we don't get ourselves in the darndest places, here we are, making our own trail up the mountainside with a wind whistling through our whiskers.
God, isn't that
not
bad?
Not even enough food to keep my ribs warm.
I'll buy you a nice big steak just as soon as we get back to Indian Spring.
No one look Barry's up in them peaks above us. I ain't too certain of ever getting back.
You aren't concerned?
No, just scared.
I think we better split up here. You know what you're to do, don't you? I got to do some mighty hard riding to reach the party before they get the Whitewater Pass.
Been a long wake up there, Sally. Seems good to be headed down this trail.
There's nothing to be afraid of now, Kit. Luke Berry is dead.
Oh, is that someone coming up? Well, it's Mr. Cassidy.
Hello there.
Hop along. Say, what are you doing here?
Oh, Topper needed a little exercise. How are you, Kit?
Oh, golly, it's good to see you, Hoppy. Hey, wait till you hear about my gold strike.
We've had a fine trip, Mr. Cassidy. Doc Sheldon's been keeping a sharp lookout. Oh, have you two met? Mr. Cassidy's an old friend of Kit's, Doc.
No, we haven't met.
Howdy, Doc. Guess maybe I'll ride back to the end of the line and join you, if you don't mind. Maybe I can help you watch for any danger.
Oh, I don't know what...
Mrs. Kirby, when we round this next bend, we'll be in Whitewater Pass. Can you make your horse stumble and not hurt yourself?
I don't understand.
Please don't ask questions. Just do as I say.
All right.
Now I'll go back there behind the dock, and we'll be on our way.
All right, get off!
Well, I don't know what your idea is in coming up to meet us, Cassidy. But I can tell you that I'm here to protect Chip.
Then we have a lot in common, Doc.
Well, just don't try...
Sally, are you all right?
Oh, yes, Chip, my horse just stumbled.
What's the matter up there?
Sally, if your horse is tired, why don't you come back here with me and let Kit lead the way?
All right, Mr. Cassidy.
Why, what's the
matter?
That's
a good idea.
There. Now we'll ride through Whitewater Pass this way. Kit first, Doc second.
Now, wait.
Sally third, and I'll bring up the rear. All right, let's get going.
But Cassidy, I don't think we should ride this way. Kit's out front. He's exposed to everything. I'll change places with him.
I wouldn't if I were you, Doc. I have my gun handy in case of any emergency.
Cassidy, I can't ride here. I'm sick, I tell you.
Mountain sickness. And there's nothing like a good ride to cure mountain sickness, Doc. Especially in number two spot. Wouldn't be surprised if you never got sick again. After today.
Poppy, that was a shot.
What do you know? Someone's out shooting coyotes.
We do.
Leave this to me, Sally. Keep your places in line.
Cassidy, please.
Who's your boss in Santa Fe, Doc?
There's no one.
He's running the whole play up here, isn't he? After Kit's mine. Bound to get it no matter who he has to kill first.
I tell you, I don't know, Cassidy. Listen, Luke Bear is up there. He's shooting at me because I'm riding second.
Sure, you put him there, and he's going to keep shooting till you talk.
Luke Bear? But I thought he was dead.
Too bad, Doc. That was a good hat. Look at her float down the gorge.
Stop him. I'll talk, Cassidy. I'll talk. Luke, stop. Stop shooting at me.
Now a word from your announcer. Hopalong Cassidy.
I'll take charge of the prisoners for a while, Hoppy.
You won't have any trouble with the doc.
Yeah. And it's surprising how a tap in the head will tame a fellow like Luke Barry.
So you were in on this too, California?
It all came so suddenly, I don't even know what happened.
Well, you see, kid, California and I knew that Luke would be up on that peak above Whitewater Pass. So when I rode up the trail to meet you, California kind of sneaked up on Luke and took over the job.
Like taking candy from a baby.
Then it wasn't Luke shooting at us at all. It was...
That's right. It was California. But the doc thought it was Luke. And he had instructed Luke to kill whoever was in number two position.
Why, that's where I had been riding.
Oh, kid.
And with the bullets whizzing past him, the doc here sang like a bird. And now we know about the whole crooked mining outfit in Santa Fe.
Good old Doc.
He just needed a little persuasion.
That's right. Say, by the way, there's something I forgot to compliment you on, California.
Yeah? I'm blushing already.
What is it?
That shooting in Whitewater Pass. Brother, when you shoot to miss, you sure don't leave much room to spare.
Miss? Did you tell me to miss him? Lordy, Hoppy, I was trying all the time to hit him.
Another job is done and they're heading back to the Bar 20. But they'd be mighty pleased if you join them again next week for another story of action and excitement. Hopalong Cassidy, starring William Boyd, is transcribed and produced in the West by Walter White, Jr. Dead Man's Hand was written by Harold Swanson. All stories are based upon the characters created by Clarence E. Mulford. This is a Commodore production.
Hopalong Cassidy and California Carlson in Dead Man's Hand from January 1st, 1950, the Clarence Mulford character brought to radio and at the same time to film and pretty quickly into the television era too, much to the profit of Mr. William Boyd, who was an astute businessman in addition to being a very good Hopalong Cassidy. There were two great Great Gildersleeves, and we'll hear from the first of them, Harold Perry, in just a moment. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can have a lot of fun with these characters as a writer, and if you take the Great Gildersleeve and combine him with Amelia Hooker, who is the sister of Judge Hooker, and you have quite a character build up right there, and that's what we have tonight. There are a few interruptions in the courtship in tonight's outing with the Great Gildersleeve from June 28, 1942.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve. The Kraft Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time, Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by Leonard L. Levinson. We'll hear from The Great Gildersleeve in just a moment. But if tomorrow's wash day and you homemakers are bound to be hurried getting lunch, let me give you a tip. Serve the folks macaroni and cheese. Do you say you haven't time to bake macaroni and cheese on wash day? Well, of course you don't, but haven't you heard of Kraft Dinner? With Kraft Dinner, you can make grand macaroni and cheese in just 7 minutes cooking time. You see, you don't bake Kraft Dinner macaroni. You don't fuss with grating cheese, because each package of Kraft Dinner contains an envelope of Kraft grated, all ready to sprinkle in. With Kraft Dinner, you get fluffy, tender macaroni drenched in cheese goodness, and you cook it in 7 minutes flat. See for yourself tomorrow. Ask your food dealer for Kraft Dinner. And now let's visit our friend, the Great Gildersleeve, who's been long noted for his easygoing disposition. In fact, his disposition was so easygoing, it finally went. Uncle Mort's face has been getting longer and his temper shorter, and he's starting to throw his weight around with unpleasant results everywhere it's landed.
Oh, my goodness, Marjorie. I'm late to the office again.
Oh, good morning, Uncle Mort.
Good morning. All right, am I supposed to starve around here? Where's breakfast? Bertie, breakfast.
Yes, sir, yes, sir. What do you start off with? Grapefruit, cantaloupe, strawberries, orange juice.
What's the trouble? Don't the stores still sell prunes?
Oh, I thought you were sick and tired of prunes.
Whatever gave you that idea?
Oh, yesterday morning you flung yourself out of the house saying you're fed up, and I asked Leroy what the trouble was, and he says you're full of prunes.
Oh!
excuse me, folks, I gotta hurry to school.
Yeah, come back here, young man. School doesn't begin again until next September.
Just my luck. Oh, what am I saying?
Now, Uncle, why don't you sit down and eat the nice egg Bertie's fried for you?
That's what I'm trying to do. Bertie, what is this, a fried egg or the stopper out of the kitchen sink?
It's an egg, Mr. Gildersleeve, and it was cooked.
It wasn't cooked, Bertie. It was vulcanized. I give up. Just wrap it up, and on my way downtown, I'll drop it on a scrap rubber pile. By George, I'd like to slap a Jap in the map with this scrap. And there's going to be a war in this house, unless I start getting fed properly around here.
My, he's worse today than he was yesterday when he poured the coffee in his lap and then spilled the cream on his vest, thus dissolving the sugar in his pocket.
Gee, I wonder what's wrong with Unc lately. He's been as jumpy as a kangaroo on a pogo stick.
Yes. Poor Uncle Mort.
You mean poor us? We's the one he's doing his jumping on.
You know, I think I have an idea what's troubling him.
Gee, what is it, sis?
Uncle Mort hasn't any love life.
Oh, for corn's sake. Be serious, can't you, Marge?
But I am serious. If he could only get excited about some woman, it might calm him down.
Oh, you mean he ought to give unto himself a wife?
What does he want a wife for? He's got Marge to sew on his buttons, and you to cook for him, and Judge Hooker to fight with. What more could a guy want?
I don't necessarily mean a wife, Leroy, but some attractive woman he could get interested in. Then he wouldn't have time to be irritable or critical. At least we could experiment.
Okay, but who'll we get to turn on the glamour?
Well, how about Mrs. Salisbury Twitchell?
Nope, her face has had too many retreads.
Well, what do you say to Miss Rosita Callahan?
Oh, she's got a pen like a rabbit. Now, wait a minute, brother. Who's going to fall in love with this girl, you or Uncle Mort?
Well, gee, I was just giving you a man's viewpoint.
Well, who would you pick up?
What about Amelia Hooker?
Judge Hooker's sister?
Sure. She's awfully nice and jolly, and she makes the swellest cakes and candy.
Yes. She's a high school teacher.
Is that so? What does she teach?
Oh, she teaches girls domestic silence. Gee, this will be a cinch.
I don't know about that. You can't make a silk purse in a pig's eye. Now, building up a romance for your Uncle Martin ain't going to be no picnic.
Picnic? That's it. We'll have a picnic on Sunday and invite Judge Hooker and his sister.
Uh-huh. Now, make some of my famous potato salad. That ought to bring Judge Hooker.
And I'll ask Amelia to bake one of her luscious cakes. That should bring Uncle.
Yeah, and it'll probably bring all the aunts, too.
No, Marjorie, this is Sunday, the day I rest my feet. I refuse to go on your picnic.
But why not, Uncle Mort?
Well, you've heard about nature lovers, haven't you?
Of course.
Well, I'm a nature hater. Rocks, skunks, snakes, bees, swamps, mosquitoes. You can take all of them and give them back to the Boy Scouts and tell them to give them back to the Indians.
Oh, but Uncle Mort, think of all the fun we'll have at Underwood Falls.
What fun? Grinding the rubber off our tires?
No, we're saving rubber. We're taking the excursion train.
We? Who all's going on this pickle and potato salad promenade?
Well, there's Leroy and me and Judge Hooker and his sister.
Judge Hooker, yeah. Is Amelia Hooker going too?
Mm-hmm. And she's baked the most delicious devil food cake. For you, incidentally.
For me? But why devil's food?
I guess it's because she thinks you're such a handsome devil.
Handsome devil. Who, me?
Oh, Uncle Mort, that's the first time you've laughed in a week.
Huh?
Now, come on along. You'll have fun.
Marjorie, I told you how I feel about picnics.
Well, strange how Amelia thought you were an outdoor man. She said that you remind her of Gary Cooper.
What's so funny about that? Amelia's entitled to her opinion. Gary Cooper, eh? Gosh, I don't know what to say. Gary Cooper, huh? Well, I don't know.
Oh, why don't you join us, Uncle? We're leaving on the 10 o'clock.
Gary Cooper, huh? Excuse me, partner. Would you mind stepping away from that there mirror? Thanks. Yeah. Oh, I see what she means by Gary Cooper. Amelia was talking about the wide open spaces.
Isn't this beautiful?
Mighty pretty country hereabouts, ma'am. The air is so fine and clear. Yes. You just say the word, Miss Amelia, and I'll climb that var tree and bring you down some eagle eggs.
Oh, no, thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, then, can I fetch you some more tater salad?
Oh, no, not another thing, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Now, Miss Amelia, no need to be formal. Just call me Throckmorton.
Well, all right, Throckmorton.
Sounds mighty like music hearing you say it, ma'am. Mind if I sit alongside you here?
No.
Oh, but that's all right. Don't move. Excuse me, Miss Amelia, but whereabouts did you put that devil's food cake?
Well, I put it right where you...
Never mind.
Marjorie, have you got a nice wet cloth?
Oh, Throckmorton, what a shame.
Yeah, that was a darn good cake. Why can't you be more careful where you put your circumference, you big pudding punch?
Now, Horace Hooker, stop insulting Throckmorton.
Oh, I don't mind. Come, Miss Amelia, let's wander down to the pond and look at the water lilies.
Be careful, Amelia. Don't let the big bullfrog sit on a lily pad.
Why, that little joker.
Oh, look, aren't they pretty?
Would you like some? I'll wade out and get them for you.
Oh, no, Throckmorton, you'll get your shoes wet.
Oh, no, I won't. I'll just take them off. And my socks and roll up my trousers.
Now, be careful, Uncle Mort.
Yeah, don't worry. Ooh, the water's cold, isn't it?
No, Daniel Boone. It's just your feet that are cold.
I'll show you, Hooker. In just a second, Amelia. I'll have your bouquet in just a... Whoa!
Morton, say something.
Can't. Probably has a frog in his throat.
Look, the Panama hat's come to the surface. It's drifting away.
That's all right. He's probably weaving another one underwater.
Oh, here he comes. Well, thank goodness.
Who put that hole there? Oh, my goodness. I've ruined all my cigars.
We'll help him out, Horace.
Look at the big flounder. Here, Gildy, take my hand.
Yeah, thanks.
Is it very wet in there?
Oh, no, Judge. Come on in. The water's fine.
Hey, let go.
Ooh!
Now look what you've done. Now I'm all wet.
You're telling me.
Boys, that's enough fun for one day. Come on out.
Yeah, I'm glad to be Amelia.
Sit down here, Uncle.
Yeah?
Well, one thing good. It's washed the cake icing off your trousers.
Gee, there must be an easier way of doing it than that.
Here, Leroy, please dry off my watch.
Okay, I'll wring it out.
Oh, my goodness, give me a towel, someone.
Why don't you just shake yourself, you little Airedale?
Look at me, I'm a mess.
Yeah, you haven't changed a bit, Judge.
Junk. Jeepers, look at the time.
Oh, it's almost time for our train.
And the station's a mile away.
Hey, gather up the picnic things, Leroy. Where's your coat, Throckmorton?
Coat? I hung it on a limb of a tree while we were playing baseball. Oh, yes, there it is.
Well, I'll get it for you. Then we must hurry up. Oh.
What's the matter, Amelia?
Look, a bird. It's building a nest in your coat pocket.
What's that? Let me see. Look, everybody, a bird's building its nest in my coat pocket.
Oh, how sweet. Well, what a pity we have to dispossess her after all her work.
Well, what are we supposed to be, the FHA? Shoo her away and let's get going.
Oh, Horace, you're too cruel.
I am not. Well, what are you going to do, leave your coat here?
Yes, by George, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
But Uncle, you'll catch cold.
No, I won't, my dear. The memory of that little mother bird's gratitude will keep me warm.
Gee, Aunt, that's the only bird in the country with a double-breasted bungalow.
All right, Sir Walter Galahad, come on or we miss the train. Help me with our stuff, Amelia.
Yes, yes, coming, Horace. That was a very sweet gesture, Throckmorton. I like that very much.
Now, Amelia, it's nothing that Gary Cooper wouldn't have done.
Can you carry the big basket, Uncle?
Yeah, sure.
You're leaving your coat here.
Well, my boy, in the first place, it's made a wonderful impression on Amelia. In the second place, the rest of the suit was ruined anyway. And in the third place, that bird that was building the nest was a woodpecker. And I never argue with woodpeckers in the first place.
The great Gildersleeve will be with us again in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, a suggestion about getting your food budget to balance. You're on the lookout for economical main dishes, I know. Well, let me point out the thrifty product called Kraft Dinner. For Kraft Dinner not only gives you grand macaroni and cheese in a jiffy, it's very economical, too. To make this delicious Kraft Dinner macaroni and cheese, you simply cook the special Kraft Dinner macaroni in boiling water. You cook it not more than 7 minutes and drain off the water. Add a little butter and milk. Then, with the Kraft grated that comes in every package, you sprinkle the cheese flavor through and through the fluffy macaroni. In as little time as it takes the coffee to perk, you have a grand money-saving main dish ready. Macaroni and cheese that the whole family will love. Many smart homemakers are never without Kraft Dinner on the pantry shelf. So tomorrow, why don't you get your pantry set for delicious macaroni and cheese that you make in 7 minutes? Get several packages of Kraft Dinner. Love, like mumps and measles, hits awfully hard when it hits late in life, and Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve has it bad. For the past week, Uncle Mort has been wooing and wowing Amelia Hooker. It's reached the stage where he's writing poetry. Now we find the Summerfield Shelley reciting a sonnet written especially for the fair Amelia.
If this were in the days of old, and I a knight so brave and bold, I'd storm your castle, Miss Amelia, and on my charger I would steal you. You like that one?
Oh, indubitably, Mr. Gilson.
Yeah, thanks, Bertie. Or do you think she'd like this one better? Two eyes of blue, cheeks soft as silk, a skin as white as grade A milk, a neck as graceful as a swan, a step as dainty as a fawn. The girl I mean is quite a looker. Her name is Miss Amelia Hooker.
Well, Mr. Gilson, it's hard to choose between the two of them. You sure is some versifier.
Do you mean versifier?
No, sapphire, on account of that hot poetry you write. I bet you could get a job pulling ties and greeting cards.
Oh, I suppose I could, but I don't want to lose my immature standing. Incidentally, Bertie, don't mention a word about this to anybody, will you please?
Oh, no, sir.
I wanted to get your reaction, because I'm going to take Miss Amelia for a stroll through the park tonight and read her 15 or 20 of the poems I've written. There's going to be a wee fiddle moon.
Oh, here you are, Bertie. I just came over to borrow a pan to put under our sofa on account of the fellow she's calling on me tonight is such a drip.
Ew.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. How's the big romance between you and Amelia coming along?
What are you referring to, Dottie?
Oh, I heard all about your big moment. It's all over town like a newspaper in a high wind.
Where did you hear this rumor?
Well, the operator at the beauty parlor told me, and she had it from one of her customers whose sister-in-law has a maid that worked next door to the judge's law clerk, and she got it straight out of Erskine Starr's column in the afternoon paper.
It what?
Mm-hmm. It said, what big businessman, size 48 stub, is that way about the charming sister of a prominent jurist? It looks like a romance of April and November.
Oh, boo!
What are you thinking about, Throckmorton?
Those crickets, Amelia. Listen to them. It's hard to believe that they can do that just by rubbing their hind legs together.
Oh, dear. Is that what you were really thinking about?
No, Amelia. I was thinking of your lips. Like twin petals of a dewy rose. They... Amelia, there's something I must ask you.
Yes.
Would you give me a...
Yes.
Would you... If you got a match, my cigar's gone out.
Oh, really, Throckmorton, you shouldn't smoke so much.
I know it, but when I look at you, my heart's on fire, and I just can't help smoking a little bit. Incidentally, Amelia, I wrote a poem this afternoon. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, yes, I'd be glad to.
All right. It goes something like this. If this were in the days of old, and I a knight so brave and bold...
It's a birthday.
Well, what do you want?
Excuse me, buddy, but have you got a dime?
No. Beat it. Can't you see I'm busy?
Oh, excuse me. I didn't know you were engaged.
We're not engaged. We're just good friends. Go on. Scram.
But all I asked for was a dime.
Amelia, do you happen to have change for a quarter?
Oh, no. No, I don't want a dime. I want the dime.
Throckmorton, I think the gentleman has a cold and is asking for the time.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, excuse me. Let's see. It's in 9:42.
Oh, thank you, Throckmorton. 9:42, huh? That means I've got plenty of time. Mind if I sit here for a few minutes?
No, you can have the whole bench. Kind of wet here anyway. Come on, Amelia, let's stroll across the grass. I still think he's trying to borrow a dime.
Oh, now let's forget everything else. It's a grand night for a walk, and you were starting to recite a poem.
Oh, yes, but I had such bad luck with the last one, I think I'll try another verse. Since I met you, I've lost all care. I feel like I'm walking on the air.
You're not walking on the air, mister. You're walking on the grass.
So what?
I'm a park policeman, seeing it's against the law to trample on the turf, lounge on the lawn, or gamble on the green.
Who's gambling?
Oh, now, officer, it was purely unintentional.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't see you, girlie. Well, run along, and from now on, try to keep your father on the straight and narrow path. Bye-bye.
Why, that flat-headed flatfoot. Why can't people let people own when people are trying to recite poetry to people?
Oh, come on, off the grass, Throckmorton, and do let me hear your poem.
Yeah, all right, Amelia, I'll try another one. Let me see. Oh, yes. Two eyes of blue, cheeks soft as silk, a skin as white as grade A milk.
Well, fancy meeting you two in the park.
I wonder if Shakespeare had to go through what I have to go through.
Oh, good evening, Horace.
Well, go on with your conversation, Gildy. Don't let me interrupt you.
Oh, what's the use? If you'll excuse me, Amelia, I'll run along home now.
Oh, but Throckmorton, I wanted to hear the rest of the, you know.
I know. I'm going to lock myself in my room and telephone it to you. Goodbye. Ah, never felt better, my dear.
Why are you making those painful noises?
I'm practicing some singing exercises. Don't tell anybody, but tonight I'm going to serenade Honeybun. Miss Hooker.
Oh, you've certainly been in there pitching the woo, Uncle.
Pitching the what?
The woo. Stringing a line. Making with a heartthrob.
If you're referring to my tender passion for Miss Hooker, Marjorie, yes, I've been giving Cupid the jive.
How's everything going?
Not so well. Last night I hit a snag.
You did?
Uh-huh. The snag's name was Judge Hooker.
You didn't actually hit him, did you, Uncle Mort?
If I didn't, then why is my mandolin all caved in? I smacked him right in the middle of his veranda.
But why, Uncle Mort?
Well, he made a big fuss just because I was strumming a few tunes to Amelia. Not that it was very late at night. Couldn't have been much later than 3. And he came barging out of the house in his nightgown, demanding that I hand over my mandolin. He kept yelling, "Give it to me! Give it to me!" So I finally did.
You shouldn't have done that, Uncle.
I know it. Now he's refused to let me visit his sister. Reminds you of Romeo and Juliet, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. But if the judge has forbidden you to see Amelia, how are you going to serenade her?
Well, tonight's his lodge night. He belongs to the Summerfield's nest of the International Order of Hoot Owls. In fact, he's the Grand Screech. So he should be gone by 8 o'clock.
Well, have you phoned to see if Amelia will be home tonight?
No, every time I call up, Hooker answers the phone. I'm going to try it again right now. Maybe he's gone out somewhere.
But suppose he hasn't.
Oh, I've got a scheme. I'll disguise my voice so he won't recognize me.
Hello?
Hello. What number is it, please?
Judge Hooker's residence.
Oh, George Hooker President, huh?
No, this is Judge Horace Hooker.
Oh, you Hooker Horsey, huh? No good.
No. This is Judge Hooker. Now, who's this?
You, George Hooker. See, me, Sammy.
No. Who are you?
Oh, me know that long time.
What's your name and what do you want?
Me, Lily. Only Lily, hand Lonely.
Oh, thanks. We wash our own hands.
Oh, for corn's sake. I said, Belly Smelly.
What are you calling about?
Missy Hooky. She home, huh?
No, she isn't. Is there any message I can take?
No, Judge. Just skip it.
Gildersleeve!
Now what are you going to do, Uncle Moore?
I don't give up very easily, Marjorie. Remember, love laughs at locksmiths and jeers at jugheads like the judge. I'm going to send Amelia a box of candy with a message inside. I read that someplace. That should do the trick. Hey, Bertie!
Would you call me, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes, Bertie. Are you finished with the dishes yet?
I've done the dunking, but the wiping is waiting.
I want you to take a package over to Miss Amelia for me. Smuggle it in so her brother doesn't find it, see? Now, do you think you can act as Cupid's messenger in this case?
Oh, certainly, Mr. Gildersleeve. I'm the Cupidest messenger in town.
I'm coming, Ralph. After all, they can't start until the Grand Screech arrives.
No, but if you're late, they're liable to elect a new one before you get there.
Oh, they couldn't do that.
Oh, no. If I remember correctly, that's how you were elected.
Yeah, but the first thing I did was to change that rule.
Yeah, well, hop in.
Wait a second. Someone's coming to the house, I think. Oh, hello, Bertie.
Oh, hello, Judge.
What have you got there? Something for me?
No, sir.
Then it must be for Miss Amelia.
Yeah, that's it. It's for Miss Amelia.
Fine. Just give it to me, and I'll take it into her.
But I've had strict instructions to put it right in her own hand.
Well, she's upstairs, and there's no use making her come down to answer the door. I'll take it.
I don't know whether that's right for me to do it.
Well, just give me one reason why not.
Okay, I'll give you a reason, but I have to go home to get it.
Fine. Now, just a second. There's no use you lugging that package all the way home and then back here again. Just leave it with me until you come back.
All right, so here it is.
Thanks, Bertie. I'll take good care of it.
That's mighty considerate of you, Judge.
Hey, what's the idea?
That's Gildersleeve's cook. I've forbidden him to see my sister, and dollars to donuts, this package is something he sent her.
What are you doing?
Spoiling Big Gildersleeve. Well, chocolates. Huh. Have some, Ralph.
Thanks. Oh, look, a note.
Let me see. Listen to this. Dearest darling Moonflower, I've phoned and called to see you all day long. Ah, but in vain. And who has so cruelly kept us apart? Your brother, the little tinker. Something's wrong with the S on his typewriter. I'll fool him. Tonight, when old Sourpuss is playing hoot owl, I'll glide beneath your window and let the golden notes of song pour out of my throat. Your fluffums wuffums.
Say, Judge, what are you going to do?
First, we're going to finish eating this candy. Then I'm going to get Amelia out of the house on some pretext or other. Then you and I are going upstairs and fill every pot, pitcher, and bucket in the house with water.
Why?
Well, when Fluffums Wuffums pours the golden notes of song out of his throat, we're going to pour the water out of the window.
For goodness sakes, quiet, you musicians. This is supposed to be a serenade, not a stampede.
Yeah, quiet, fellas.
Now, you boys hide in the bushes while I tiptoe up in the porch. You get it? And I'll let you know when I'm ready.
Okay, Mr. Gildersleeve. Come on, boys.
Now, take it easy and be quiet, boys.
Ah, Amelia, light of my life, list to my song of love. Just a little love, a little kiss. Just an hour that holds a world of bliss. Eyes that tremble like the stars above. And the
it's me, Gildy. Yeah. I hope you're dripping wet, you great big drip.
Is that so? Well, you never touched me. I was here in the porch swing all the time.
Yeah, but you got the whole band. We're all doused. Yeah. Now, it's you fellas right for making all that noise.
Oh, by the way, Hooker, that's the policeman's band.
What?
Fix yourself up pretty, Judge. You're about to have visitors.
I don't care. At least my sister never got to hear you.
Oh, no? Who do you think this is sitting in the porch swing with me? Rudy Valley? Ladies and gentlemen, this has been our last broadcast before our summer vacation. Before we go, I'd like to express my sincere appreciation to the Kraft Cheese Company for a most pleasant year. Also, my deep thanks to our writer, Leonard Levinson, and to the members of the cast for their able assistance. Walter Tetley, who plays Leroy, my nephew, Loreen Tuttle, my niece, Marjorie, Lillian Randolph, who's Bertie, Earl Ross as Judge Hooker, Paula Winslow as Dottie Dobson, and William Randolph Mills, our musical director, and Cecil Underwood, our producer. I am proud to announce that during the 8 weeks we'll be off the air, the United States government will take over our half hour to bring you the Victory Parade. Each of the top NBC shows is contributing one program to this series, so be sure to listen in. I hope you all have a pleasant summer, and now, good night.
Heard on this program was composed and conducted by William Randolph. This is Jim Bannon speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to tune in again August 30th at this same time for the further adventures of The Great Gildersleeve.
Right now, you American homemakers are more nutrition conscious than ever before. You know that wholesome, nourishing food will help make strong Americans. Yes, and you're finding out that the right foods aren't necessarily expensive. Certainly a good example of that is nutritious parquet margarine, the wholesome, delicious spread for bread made by Kraft. You see, parquet margarine is an economical source of important food value. Why, nourishing parquet margarine is one of the best energy foods you can serve. And every pound contains 9,000 units of important vitamin A. Yet, for all its goodness, it's thrifty, too. Now, once you've tasted parquet's delicate, appetizing flavor, you'll agree it deserves a place on your table morning, noon, and night. So tomorrow, order a pound or two of delicious, nutritious parquet margarine. Just ask for parquet, P-A-R-K-A-Y. Parquet margarine made by Kraft. This program has reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
It's always fun to see a comic character in love. I mean, it worked for Shakespeare with the Merry Wives of Windsor and Falstaff, and it works here with the great Gildersleeve, Gildy wooing Amelia Hooker in that broadcast from June 28, 1942. It was the last show, as you may have noticed, before the summer vacation. Featured Lorene Tuttle as Marjorie and Paula Winslow, who went on to become the wife of Riley on radio, as Dottie Dobson, to be replaced during the summer by Victory Parade back in 1942. The CBS Radio Workshop is next. We'll go to the front lines in the Battle of Gettysburg as old-time radio drama continues here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.